Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Our subject for today is bullying. Seems to have gotten a lot of press recently. The movie Bully is out, of course, and I was struck, as you probably were, by a front page editorial in the Sioux City Journal, which they ran. In fact, it took up the entire front page. The headline, "We Must Stop Bullying. It Starts Here. It Starts Now." This was occasioned by the death of a young man in that community, Kenneth Weishun, who came out as gay several weeks ago and was intensely bullied, took his own life. Unfortunately, not an incredibly unusual event. And we're going to talk about the subject today. We have with us on the line from Salt Lake City, Carla Kelly, Executive Director and Founder of Human Rights Education Center of Utah. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
In studio with us, Clint Farmer, school counselor with Edith Bowen Laboratory School, elementary school in Logan. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us come.
And Scott Ross is assistant professor in the Special Education and Rehabilitation Department of the Emma Eccles Jones College of Education and Human Services at Utah State University. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
By the way, Professor Ross, I understand you just won an award for your work, research in bullying. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
We'll hear about that research. You're implementing this schools nationwide, I understand.
That's right.
Before we get into the subject, or a way to get into the subject, let's hear the trailer next from the movie, Lee Hirsch's movie. By the way, that's a showing in Salt Lake City this week in a special event. So your opportunity to see that that movie with some discussion. But here's about 2 minutes. It's the trailer to this movie we've been all hearing about.
The last couple of days, we had heard that Tyler had his head shoved into a wall locker. They said he's a geek.
My concern is that you were making someone feel so uncomfortable that they didn't want to be in school.
I feel kind of nervous going to school because I like learning, but I have trouble with making friends.
They said he's a geek. Some kids have told him that he's worthless to go hang himself. And I think he got to the point enough was enough.
Tonight, a tragic situation.
A Perks boy, just 11 years old, believed to have been desperate enough to take his own life.
An awfully complicated and difficult issue.
Kids will be kids. Boys will be boys. They're just cruel at this.
Here, what we get is nothing's wrong. We didn't do anything. Everything's fine.
They punch me, strangle me, take things from me, sit on me.
Give it to him!
He's not safe on that bus.
I've been on that bus. They are just as good as gold.
My voice is not going to fall silent. I will go to my grave until a difference is made.
We reached out to parents that have lost kids, parents of kids that are being bullied all over the world, and it took off like wildfire.
All it takes is for one person to stand up.
Be the difference. Go out and find that one child, that new kid, standing over there by himself. Be willing to stand up for him.
Everything starts with one and builds up. Eventually, we have an army.
If we all do it together, we will change the world.
That's the trailer from the movie, the documentary Bully. It follows five kids in specific in rural areas around the country, two of whom committed suicide. Very hard-hitting documentary that's showing nationwide, a special showing coming up this week in Salt Lake City. Let me start our discussion here about bullying in Utah with Carla Kelly, again, Executive Director and Founder of Human Rights Education Center of Utah. And I believe, Ms. Kelly, you have experience through your son and grandson, right, with bullying.
Yes, I have. And I also have a gay nephew. mean, they were bullied because they were gay, but that's not... I mean, bullying is bullying. It doesn't matter, you know, whether you're gay or... bullying is a high form of discrimination. And even though in the gay community, it seems that kids are getting it in a much more horrific way.
Hmm. Yeah, so you think it's getting worse.
And I think more awareness is being brought to it, mm-hmm. but it's a terrible problem.
Would you tell us about maybe your son? I guess he came out and then bullying started?
Well, I was fortunate with my son, who is now in his 40s, that we sort of faced this together. I mean, he didn't really have to go in the closet. I didn't know anything about anyone being gay at the time. I've learned a lot since then. So we sort of, you know, worked on it together. He's been a real example and helped a lot of other kids that have been bullied, been kicked out of their homes for being gay, that kind of thing. We've acted as support. So certainly we've had incidences. One night he was what they call gay bashed with some friends in a car. People hopped out with a baseball bat and bashed in the windows. Corey was with a couple of his friends. The point is that no one should be ever in danger. And kids, particularly in school and to and from school, that kind of thing, deserve to be safe. Mm-hmm. And it's a terrible problem. However, I'm going to say right off the top here, I think that schools get scapegoated a lot for bullying. It's not a school problem. It's a community problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the result of our society.
And that's what the editorial board of the Sioux City Journal said. It's we're all responsible. Let me turn to Clint Farmer. You're in a school counselor. Have you, I imagine you've seen bullying?
Yeah, I've been working for within schools for about the last 14 years. Prior to that, I was working with Division of Youth Corrections as a clinical social worker and developing programs for them on different things. And I came over to schools after the Columbine shootings, and they had some federal money. They started putting effort into, you know, trying to work on school violence within schools and do threat and risk assessment. So I was hired in to come in and take a look at Cache District from top to bottom and make some recommendations on violence prevention and drug and alcohol stuff. And that's how I got my feet working in the schools. Quite enjoyed it, but a lot of work, I think it's real important work, is the bully prevention. In that role I had working off that grant, we had opportunities to do a lot of deep thinking and research on what was working out there. And there was a bunch of bully prevention programs that we were looking at that, quite frankly, even with the money we had from the federal grant, we couldn't afford. They're very expensive. They're very time-consuming, take a lot of time in the classroom. But being married to a teacher, I know that time's important. You don't always get it. So through the process of my career, I've worked with kids that, you know, struggling and having difficulty, working in secondary schools for 10 years, and then had a chance to come up to Edith Bowen. This is my third contract I'm finishing up. And as part of that, we got there, we did a survey, and sure enough, over 50% of the kids at the school said that they'd been bullied. So it seemed like an awful lot to me. I was very discouraged by that. So we did a follow-up survey, a little more formal survey, and it actually, you know, reinforced what we learned in our first survey. So I went about the business of trying to find the best program that I could to implement in a school to help bullying. And I'd heard from some of the conferences that I'd gone to about this great program that was put together by Scott Ross and a few other great people out there. So I did some research on it. I found it. It was easy to get online. I could download it for free. And so I looked at all the material. And having done all the work before and looking at bully prevention programs, when I looked at this one, I thought, this'll work. It has the key elements to it of working with bystanders and teaching social responsibility. It doesn't take a huge amount of time. You can do it within 4 or 5 lessons. Teachers can do it, or a counselor can do it. But generally the idea is that you're working with the whole school. You're working to change an entire school culture. And so you're going to do more things as a school counselor than just this. But to me, this is really what it's at the core. Kids need to feel safe at school in order to concentrate and then to be able to do well academically.
Let's turn to Professor Ross. Sure. How did you get into this subject matter?
My work started as a teacher and experiencing so many kids that had run into the bullying issue. But really what directed me in this direction was the fact that we didn't have the resources. So often we don't have the resources to do the things that we want to do. So I came back to graduate school in an effort to design things that were actually feasible for schools and communities to do. And while I was there, we ran what's called a meta-analysis, which is basically a study of studies where we took all those bully prevention programs that are out there, all the ones that were out there at the time about 6 years ago. And what we did was we analyzed all those programs that are out there to find out, number one, do they work? Number two, when they don't work, why not? And in an effort to try to come up with something that's really feasible in our schools. And so the results of that came back very mixed as far as some school interventions had some effects. Some actually had negative effects. And we've seen this over and over again where some bully prevention strategies will actually result in more kids feeling like they're bullied. So that's obviously a big problem. So the development of some of the curricular materials and the training materials that we've come up with is based on really the fundamental components of effective intervention for bullying.
We'll talk about those as we go along. Let me follow up with you, Professor. I was talking to a friend the other day who has some children in various grades. They're saying children are very egocentric. They they kind of see their own world and maybe are not aware that a problem is happening. And so as Mr. Farmer said, and Ms. Kelly, we all have to take responsibility for this. Do kids have a greater, harder time taking full responsibility and noticing that they have a responsibility?
Let me redirect your question just a little bit. I think the real challenge for kids is in recognizing quote-unquote bullying. Because when we talk about the definition of bullying, we're talking about something that requires an intent to hurt somebody. We're talking about something that has to happen frequently. And we're talking about something that has to have a power differential. Just imagine sitting on a playground watching a bunch of kids play and trying to determine whether one kid has more power than another kid before you decide whether it's bullying. Now pretend you're a kid and do that same thing. Mm-hmm. So the kids have a major difficulty to saying, oh, that was bullying, so I have to do this about it. What we actually work with is not focusing on that language. So whereas it's important to know what bullying is, we actually talk about what respectful behavior is. And so when somebody is not treating you respectfully, what do you do about it? When you see somebody not treating somebody else respectfully, what do you do about it? That bullying terminology is becoming very loaded. In fact, in high schools, there are a lot of high school students who are saying, we don't want bully prevention, because mm-hmm. what it means is if we're called a bully, there's a lot of problems with that. We get in lots of trouble. But if I tease this kid over and over and over again, I'm fine. Mm. Right? So once we cross that arbitrary line, then it's bullying. So a lot of high school students are pushing back now from all of the mandates that are in saying we need a bully prevention strategies. Mm.
Carla Kelly, I heard you agreeing there, I think, that have you had seen similar things?
Well, I agree. I haven't. I don't like the word bully. I've avoided many years from even using it. But I think our kids need more character education in terms of, I call it empathy education. You know, that's what I call it. You know, we work with all kinds of youth organizations where we're dealing with teaching kids empathy. Our kids have been pretty desensitized, and we live in a violent society. And so when they're either experiencing violence at home or their own behaviors are being said that they're normal. If they're not, then we are abnormalizing the normal. I mean, kids see violence on everywhere at every turn. And so I think we do need to work more with kindness and empathy. It seems really strange that we have to be teaching these things, but I think there's a lot of reasons for it. But I agree that the word bullying and this whole push can be loaded and is loaded. And people become defensive. You know, if somebody pushes, they push back.
And you named your organization the Human Rights Education Center of Utah.
Yeah, that's a big long name.
Yeah, but I guess it's not the bullying center of, or prevention center of Utah. And the front page on your website provides empathy and bullying prevention education for people of all ages and backgrounds. So you, in your travels and experience, people of all ages get bullied, do they, or is it mostly school kids?
Oh no, of course. I think little bullies grow up to be big bullies. And, you know, there is a movement going about workplace bullying. It's getting a slow start in the United States. It's hard to push that to companies. But, I think bullying is not reserved for the kids. It definitely, I mean, we all know bullies. We all know adult bullies. And then look what our kids and our youth are seeing on TV, even during a political campaign. We're watching people bully each other, and then we say that's normal, and then we question the kids when they're behaving the same way.
We turn to Clint Farmer. I'm sure you've seen all different kinds of bullying, but you probably also experienced another fact that I think is the case in many cases, that kids don't talk about it. They don't go talk to a teacher or parents, and they continue getting bullied.
Yeah, that was one of the things that stood out to me when we first did our survey. We're trying to find out, were kids bullied, and then what way, and then also what part of the school. Clearly, is it before school, on the way to school? If it's going on during the school day, where is it happening? Very few of it, very small amounts happen in the classroom. A lot of it happens at recess and at lunchtime recess, and you can differentiate between the two, and you need to on your surveys, because a lot of times during teacher recess, what we found in our school is when the kids were getting bullied the most, because they weren't supervised as much. During lunch recess, we had plenty of people. We'd been training them, working really hard about recognizing these things, implementing this program. And so the good news was that even by having adults in the right place looking for the right thing, you can cut down on it. The bad news is that you know, adults sometimes aren't always looking. It drives me crazy sometimes when I look at program and they're looking at playground monitors and they're reading the paper or they're correcting papers or something. You might as well not be there if you're not going to look. You got to watch for certain things. And I think to me as a school counselor, lunchtime and those free times, those are the most important times. I'm really active during those times. I teach my practicum students. You need to be active. You need to be where the kids are. Since you don't have a classroom, you need to be where the kids are. So you're active before school, during lunchtime, after school. But we can't control those teacher recess things. But so they do happen. When you find out that they happen, then you sit down, you set some goals and some plans to work on it. Really surprised. I think we had 23 kids. If I just go with just the third, fourth, and fifth grades, we had 23 kids that reported had been bullied but would not tell an adult. So certainly we set a goal to target that. And you know, the program that we're using, the bully prevention and positive behavior support, which Scott Ross was one of the developers, it addresses that. So, and we've seen that. We've seen our 2011 or 2012 data, good trend lines, and, you know, pleased to say, I think we only had nine kids say they weren't safe in the school the first years we did this. We had three kids this last year say that they were. So we're making progress every year, and it appears that the culture of the school knows and is on board with, you know, bullying's not okay. We're willing to stand up and look at it that way.
We're talking about bullying. If you've just joined us, that's obvious, but you may not have heard me introduce my guests, and so let me do that again. Carla Kelly is Executive Director and Founder of the Human Rights Education Center of Utah. We have her on the phone with us. In studio is Scott Ross, Assistant Professor in the Special Education and Rehabilitation Department at USU, and Clint Farmer, School Counselor at Edith Bowen Laboratory School in Logan. We turn back to Professor Ross. You were talking about how confusing it is for perhaps a teacher looking at recess to detect, okay, what's going on here, even harder for kids. But as a teacher or a parent, what are some things I can do to make things safer, to detect this, perhaps early?
Great question. I think it's important that, as Clint mentioned, that we be on the playground, that we be in these settings as much as we can to observe. Now, here's the key, though, to bullying. What we found, and actually there's some great researchers in Canada doing this research right now over the last 10 years, where they've actually taken video cameras and placed them on playgrounds, and they've matched those video recordings with audio recordings of the kids. And what they find is every time there's an incident of bullying, harassment, teasing, whatever, who else is around, right? They can see it on the video. And what they found is that over 87% of the time, there's somebody else there. Bullying is not done for the lunch money very often. Bullying is not done for some internal reason. Almost 87% of the time, or almost always, bullying serves the function of peer attention. It's because somebody else is laughing. It's because the victim is trying to fight back. It's because of those things that reinforce the problem behavior that tend to move it towards bullying incidents. And so the real key to doing something about it is to address that peer attention. So rather than most intervention strategies out there involve policy where if a kid gets caught bullying, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this to you. Problem is the reinforcement that kid gets from their friends, right? Those kids who laugh when they pick on Johnny. That's more valuable than the punishment that we adults try to deliver. So if we really want to have a strong impact on it, we've got to focus on the bystanders in two ways. First, we've got to focus on removing the peer attention. In other words, get kids to stop laughing. Get kids to stop joining in. Get kids to stop trying to physically fight back when they know they're half the size of the bully, right? Even though dad said, fight back, stand up for yourself. Kids who actually will fight back tend to get hurt more. So we need to have a strategy so they can remove that peer attention. We don't want to make it so that they can't stand up for themselves, but we have to do it safely. So there's the first thing of removing that peer attention for the bullying behavior. The other is we've got to start reinforcing kids for standing up for one another. So there's those two components that are absolutely critical. And those play into adults on the playground or wherever they're watching, and they see a kid try to do it appropriately. They need to jump in and reinforce that kid, saying, awesome job, saying stop in an appropriate way. The same thing goes when they ignore somebody teasing somebody else. When a friend of a bully doesn't laugh and join in, we adults, even though it's not necessarily bullying, quote unquote, yet, adults need to step in and say, fantastic job not laughing when that kid did that.
And I could see how you have to work on the whole culture of the school.
Absolutely.
Everybody has to buy in. How do you have that happen?
Great question again. So here's where we really, the rubber meets the road in terms of efficiency and feasibility in a school. A lot of programs out there have an enormous package where they require all these different components. Frankly, especially in the economic times that we're in right now, it's not feasible. So what we need to do is start with interventions that get us the biggest bang for our buck. One of the things we can do is we teach school-wide expectations. How do we expect every kid in the school to behave? And that's as simple as something like being safe, being responsible, being respectful to every kid. And then we say, what does it look like to be safe, responsible, and respectful on the playground? What does it look like in the classroom? What does it look like in the bathroom? What does it look like in the cafeteria? We teach that simple version. You could even call it character ed at a very simple level, right? Of how do we be that way towards each other? And then we reinforce that school-wide. And we have a system for collecting data on when it's not being done. Mm-hmm. Then what we found is that by itself has had significant effects on bullying. Just doing that small intervention, there have been randomized control trials or big studies that have demonstrated that works. Now, That's not going to work for every kid, though, right? You're going to have 80% of the kids. That's all they'll need, and they're going to be great. But you're still going to have 10 to 15% of the kids who are going to need a little bit more, right? You think of a few kids in the classroom who they tease. They're not necessarily the big bullies or the gang members yet, but they are starting to tease each other, especially around third through fifth grade and above, right? They're starting to get that peer attention I referred to. So they're starting to tease a little bit more. We need a simple addition to remove that peer attention. What we did with this bully prevention and positive behavior support is we actually added in a what do you do if somebody's not respectful towards you? We say stop in a school-wide manner. If it doesn't stop, you walk away. If it doesn't stop, you go and tell an adult. Simple three-step response. But the real key to the intervention is that we don't focus on teaching these lessons. We focus on walking the walk. We focus on having teachers actually coach kids on a daily basis, saying, what are you going to do today if Sally pushes you, right? Oh, today I'm going to say stop. Good. Show me that stop signal. Oh, that looks awesome. That sort of coaching is what makes the difference. There are uncountable different programs and curricula out there. The problem is the generalization. We teach something in the classroom. We want them to do it on the playground. That's a big jump for a lot of kids to take something they learn in the classroom and use it in the real world. And so to get that, we've got to include the coaching and the ongoing support of the kids. And we've gotten some major effects for that 10 to 15% of kids who need a little bit of help. There will be always 1 to 5% of kids who need high levels of support, right? The gang members, the kids with emotional disorders and that sort of thing will need that higher level of support. But the key is to work systematically so we're not trying to embed too much at once.
We're going to take a break here in just a moment. I want to turn back to Carla Kelly before we do that. And in the next half of the program, I want to talk about long-term effects from bullying. You have a perspective with several family members. I want to talk maybe specifically about your son who experienced some, sounds like pretty severe bullying, and you say has gone on to help other people. I wonder some things you can tell other people how best to handle this. If it happens to you, happens to your child, sounds like your son handled it pretty well.
Well, I can only assume that you're asking me about the fact that he's gay and that was the reason he was particularly attacked that one time, which is true. If a kid is gay, and of course we've got these problems because we've got issues in the schools where a lot of people are really uncomfortable with dealing with a kid's sexual orientation. So I think my best advice to anyone is that to get themselves educated, and what you can do to help a kid if he is being bullied because of some sort of gender identity or sexual orientation. So education was the key for me, which is why I put human rights education, the word education, in this little nonprofit. And to find out as much as you can about what kind of programs are going on in your kids' schools. And I think all the comments we made here today have been terrific. I mean, it gives me great hope to know that people are really working on this to have things happen in the schools. But it does take the school's full commitment and changing the school culture. And so it becomes a very complex issue, especially in Utah, when, our teachers and our administrators are so overburdened anyway. And then you want them to, you throw in something else that it almost becomes a have to. So it takes dedicated people like these two gentlemen to really get in there and get something done. So that's maybe a very long answer, but I think education is the key, and to be involved in your community because this is a community problem. I think people in the community should be supporting their schools, whether or not that they've got kids in the school or not, because there's a lot of bullying going on to and from school with some real serious issues. There's a lot of bullying going on in the school buses. So I think as community members, we have to, you know, step up and care about our own communities, whether that's your own small neighborhood or whether that's, you know, the larger Salt Lake City. Find something you can do and do it. We are in this together. We're connected, and we have kids killing themselves. Hmm. Not okay.
We're going to take a brief break. We'll be back with the subject of bullying with Carla Kelly, Executive Director and Founder of Human Rights Education Center of Utah, Scott Ross, who's Assistant Professor in Special Education and Rehabilitation Department at USU, and Clint Farmer, School Counselor at Edith Bowen Laboratory School in Logan. We'll talk about who is perhaps most vulnerable to bullying. We'll talk about more on bully prevention programs and long-term effects. Talk about cyberbullying as well. Much to talk about. You're welcome, by the way, to join this conversation. We'd love to have your story at 1-800-826-1495. 1-800-826-1495. Back after this break.
Steve Eaton is a freelance writer who lives in Logan. He writes a column that appears in the Deseret News every other Saturday.
Up until now, weddings have been the kind of thing that happened to other people, but not to me. I was married many, many years ago, but I never expected that one of my kids would get married. Both of them have acted like children most of their lives, and two of them spent years being outright teenagers. They were not the marrying kind. They played too many video games, drank too much milk, and kept their rooms far too messy to ever be the type to go out in public and get married. In retrospect, I think there were some clues that my daughter Sarah was thinking of marriage that I overlooked. Right after she got engaged, for example, she got that ring and started going through wedding magazines and started talking about matching colors. Then she bought this ridiculously expensive wedding dress, and my wife was happy for her. At first, I thought this might be a sign that my wife was loosening up on the financial reins and that I could finally buy French bread pizza whenever I wanted. Instead, she tells me that we're poorer than we have ever been before and that it's so bad we may have to go to other people's wedding receptions just to eat. As it turns out, wedding receptions cost way more than you think. You might expect it's like springing for Little Caesar's pizzas for a room full of people, but it's not like that at all. I know that normal people, the kind of people who go out to dinner all the time and get to vacation in Hawaii, are unfazed by wedding costs. But because I actually make less money than anyone I know, throwing a giant reception party for everyone was no small thing. And it wasn't just our lack of money that had me worried. We don't have people over for barbecues or dinner because we only know how to make chocolate chip cookies, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and how to make change at Pizza Hut. Actually, my wife Barbara has learned to make all manner of things chocolate, and that's what people got who came to my daughter's wedding reception. Barbara, who is a good person, who can work for days and days for other people, stayed up all night several times before the reception making chocolate food for it. The Klingon in me wanted to just show my manhood and throw a first-class wedding by using our credit cards. She would have none of that, and our guests didn't seem to mind. I did invite this nice but crazy guy from the gym who has several times made up rules for me to follow so that I could be skinny, young, and strong. Oh, he would not have understood this wedding. I was worried he'd come in and see all the chocolate decadence and smash everything, but he didn't come. That left us all free to have fun playing in the chocolate fountains and eating truffles, cookies, and cake bites. There was chocolate on everything and everyone. I like that part. We didn't mean to offend anyone, but we kept discovering key people we had overlooked. We forgot, for example, to invite any of the Republican presidential candidates, which is kind of mean when you consider that some of them are going through very difficult times right now, and they could use all the friends they could get. I hope it wasn't my fault that Rick Santorum just up and quit the race after my daughter's celebration. He did look like his feelings had been hurt. I would have liked to have invited the president himself, because I like him, but there's lots of Utah people who are sore at him for making changes he believed in, and of course you can't just have the Secret Service running around at a family event like that. people still came, and it was kind of strange to see my various worlds colliding. I saw people from my church talking with people from work who were talking with my actual family members. There are people from olden times and people from modern times. I don't think I would have been surprised to discover the cast from the TV show The Office mingling about the reception and loading up on truffles. It was surreal. And we were surprised to discover that my daughter's husband, Brad, who my daughter brought with her to the reception, had invited a bunch of his friends and family to come too. It was supposed to be just a family deal, but they acted like family, and they were all likable people. Immediately after the wedding, before the reception that evening, they threw an entire lunch for a house full of people that featured real thick cheeseburgers, salads, and ice cream for everyone. They either have more money than we do or more credit cards. I suspect they're normal people who probably vacation in Hawaii. Overall, I found it to be quite the traumatic experience, and it took us days to recover. The next morning, we stumbled around through enough chocolate-covered, color-coordinated garbage to transform a dumpster into a work of art. It turns out, after you have a wedding reception, everyone cheers and goes home, and then you have to clean up for days and days and take everything home. The good news was that Sarah and Brad skipped the cleanup part, and we ended up with all the presents, which I think is very cool. However, we did come across one unsettling and disturbing discovery in the reception aftermath that still has us confused, frightened, and bewildered. It appears my daughter has moved out of the house. This is Steve Eaton.
Stand up and the light up. 13 million kids will be bullied in the U.S. this year.
3 million students are absent every month because they feel unsafe at school.
Bullying is a serious problem that happens everywhere. It's not a phase children need to go through. Bullying causes serious and lasting harm.
Students, if you see bullying, step in if you feel safe, and always tell an adult.
Visit www.thebullyproject.com.
I'm a New York Yankee, and I'm taking a stand against bullying.
There's a public service announcement that's associated with the movie Bully. This was New York Yankee. I believe in we have several of those startling statistics. Some 13 million children will be bullied this year. 3 million students will be absent because they feel unsafe at school. The movie Bully is out. Front page editorial in the Sioux City Journal. And we're talking about the subject as it relates to Utah. Our guests in this hour, Carla Kelly, Executive Director and Founder of Human Rights Education Center of Utah, Scott Ross, Assistant Professor in Special Education and Rehabilitation Department in the M. Eccles Jones College of Education and Human Services at Utah State University, and Clint Farmer, School Counselor with Edith Bowen Laboratory School. Before the break, Carla Kelly, you were emphasizing the seriousness of the issue that kids are dying because of this. And as we see in the movie Bully and this tragic incident in Iowa, this is a very, very serious issue. Kids don't have the equipment to deal with this, less than adults. Of course, adults sometimes don't have the equipment to deal with this. I wonder if you talk a bit about that, the seriousness of this problem.
I'm going to a memorial tonight in Ogden. There was an 18-year-old kid that killed himself last week, because he was gay, and he, you know, he had been incessantly bullied at school, time and time and time again. I think kids that appear to be different, quote unquote, you know, stand out more as targets, and the gay community being one of those. Kids with disabilities. I had a mother call me last week with just a horrendous story about her child who's being bullied at school that has a pretty severe disability. So it's a terribly important subject. And we have to do something about it. And I really believe that, you know, we have more good kids than we don't. But kids are still kids, and they need supervision, and they need attention, and they need, you know, all the things that we would like to give a kid in an ideal world. However, the only way I see anything happening at all is, on top of these grand efforts that we're all trying to make here, is that, you know, we, again, reach out in our own communities and get to work. We have to do this. Mm. We have to.
Clint Farmer, is there any predictor? Are there certain kids who are more likely to get bullied? Anybody, I guess, who's different, do you think?
Well, I think shy kids or quiet kids or kids that, you know, sometimes put off certain body language can be targets. But essentially, you know, by teaching the whole school what's expected, what to do in these situations when you see bullying or you find yourself on the back end of bullying is really key. And I think Scott Ross talked about this earlier. When you start off schools, you teach kids expectations, how you walk in the hallway, how you behave in the auditorium, how you line up for line. By teaching the bullying piece there too, is along with that, how we behave on that, it becomes just part of the culture. So kids are growing up knowing this is just what we do at Edith Bowen, or this is just what we do at this elementary school, and this works and I believe it's going to work in every school. I've implemented it down at Bridger Elementary for the last 2 years, getting the same results, the same data with kids, and really people are pretty excited about what's going on there. So,
By the way, the number is 1-800-826-1495. Subject is bullying. We'd love to have your question or comment, 1-800-826-1495, or you can email us at upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com. And we do have an email comment. He says, great show, thank you. I'd like to offer an idea which may or may not be useful. You describe bullies well, those who abuse people that they know they can dominate. I think it would be valuable to teach students that bullies are therefore cowards. Once children learn that bullying is cowardly, bullies might lose the positive attention they seek and gain a character assessment that they will not appreciate. That's from Mark. Professor Ross, I wonder, what's your reaction to that?
It's a great email. Thank you for that. When we go the denigration route, we have to be very, very careful. One, there's that difficulty in recognizing what a bully is, right? So once I'm labeled a bully, we often see that kid may get bullied themselves, right? So if we're going to say that bullying is cowardly or the bad thing to do, and I definitely value and understand the purpose of not reinforcing bullying, but if we put you're a bad person if you are called a bully, we actually may run into bigger problems in the long run. So we just have to be very careful about putting a negative link to a person. We want to focus on the behavior. So yes, bullying is not good and we don't want to do it. And most kids would agree with that. But what they don't understand is that what they are doing, whether it is bullying or not, they see it oftentimes a kid will push, let's say Johnny pushes Sally off the stairs, right? And you go to Johnny, say, Johnny, that was bullying. And he says, no, that was a bully. We were playing a game, right? She wanted me to push her off the stairs, that sort of thing. You often get those sorts of responses. But let's turn that on its head. And if we go to Johnny and say, Johnny, did Sally say stop to you when you started pushing her? Oh yeah, she said stop. And what'd you do about it? I just kept pushing her, right? We're in a different conversation now. So again, focusing on simple responses kids can make as opposed to the actual terminology can be much more effective for the kids.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about cyberbullying. Start with Clint Farmer on this. Unfortunately, you get new technology, and there are going to be good things there, but the bad stuff is going to migrate over there as well. And this can be just vicious.
Yeah, quite often people would just assume bullying is just with people pushing and shoving each other. And what we've seen in the schools and what we've seen and our data supports that too is that just as likely to be a victim of being excluded or having what we call relational aggression take place against you, which someone spreads a rumor, keeps it going. The technology, cyberbullying, just accelerated that, just made that more difficult. So you have to kind of be able to work with, track down some of those sources, I think, and get to the bottom of it. But it's something also you can teach as well. It's not okay to do this. Here's how we behave with this technology. Here's how we behave in the school again. A lot of conferences have focused on relational aggression the last few years. My first exposure to it was going to a conference around positive behavior supports, and they had the author of the book Odd Girl Out, and you know what a great influence that was on me working in secondary schools at the time, of being able to try to track down bullying, realizing that there's a hierarchy of girls in a group, and that sometimes the girls that feel like they're not part of the top three or in the upper echelon, they do things in order to show commitment to the group, and so they'll go out and bait students or you know kids into conversations and then tattle on them and create this conflict. Well, we weren't making any progress in getting that to settle down until we listened to her about the book, started really tracking some relationships, figuring out who belonged to what group. And if there's any counselors out there listening, all I can tell you is that the best way to figure out who belongs to one group is just go sit in the lunchroom. Kids sit in this place where they're comfortable. They eat there every day. I've just learned over time that, you know, if I'm working with one kid on this issue, that probably the four or five kids around him are peripheral users of cigarettes or whatever the issue is. So we learn to kind of track group dynamics that way, and then talking with kids. And then once we get the people we need to together, then it stopped. We're able to kind of fix it. So it sounds simple, but it's not. But, you know, good people that are sharp, that understand it, and with a good faculty and student body that's very committed to making it change, you can change this. You can turn this around. So
let's go to a caller. This is Jessica in North Logan. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, I have a comment. I was a receiver of bullying as a child, and I'm now in my 30s, and you know, that stuff never goes away. You get over it, and I've really had to learn how to forgive. And it's been an important thing for people that go through bullying to learn how to forgive the people that, you know, unfortunately use them in inappropriate ways to get a rise out of, you know, their peers and all the things you guys have been talking about. I can agree with that. And what I've realized as I've grown up and run into people that I experience bullying from, is a lot of them grew up and realized that they'd made a mistake. And some of them have actually come and apologized to me with tears in their eyes and said, I'm so sorry that I ever caused you any pain. This has bothered me for years. And I had been able to get over it, and so it was easy for me to say, you know, I forgive you. But I know that's not the case for everybody, because it takes a lot of time to get over that kind of abuse. And the hardest thing for me to go through was, I mean, I'm so excited that you guys are talking about this, because in the 1980s, even I lived in Cache Valley in the 1980s in the Cache County School District, and the principal, unfortunately, at the time, he would just turn a blind eye. And a lot of teachers didn't know what to do, and some teachers would try to be proactive, but often it was up to my parents to try to step in and try to protect me. And I was very small for my age, so I didn't really know what I was supposed to do. And I often just got picked on because I was little, and I was very sensitive, and they could easily get me to cry. And so I watch my own girls now going through, you know, they're beginning to experience a little bullying, and it's very painful to relive it, watching your children go through some of it, and then trying to talk to them about appropriate behaviors, and then how to respond to bullying, and then how not to be a bully. So I'm really excited that you guys are talking about this, because I think I wish that we would have had a dialogue like this when I was a kid, because it could have prevented a lot of damage. And I know that other people even got worse bullying than I did, so anyways, that was just my comment, and I hope that this continues to go throughout the country, because I don't want my kids to have to go through this like what I did.
Thank you, Jessica. We really appreciate you sharing your experiences.
Thanks.
That's really it really brings the problem home, doesn't it? In her 30s, she's mm-hmm. still dealing with this, and it sounds like successfully trying to forgive.
Yeah, and I appreciate her courage being able to call in and talk about that mm-hmm. pain. So,
Carla Kelly, I wonder, people you've met still dealing with the effects of bullying years later?
Oh,
I'll never forget. I had a training with adults a few years ago, and a woman who was 82 stood up and shared her story when she was a child, how she'd been bullied, and the tears were streaming down her face.
Yeah.
You know, these are events that stay with us and wound our souls and our hearts. And and I want to, if we could talk about cyberbullying for just a minute, I wanted to give some information about at least some resource information. I have found probably the best information from the Cyberbullying Research Center and their books. And I've actually been to a couple of conferences and seen these guys present. So I just wanted to throw that out there for the audience that it would be, you can find it online, the Cyberbullying Research Center, and the book is Bullying Beyond the Schoolyard. Really up-to-date, wonderful information continually on their site, on the website. It's just up-to-date, two college professors, so it's academically based. It's good stuff.
Very good. We just have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to follow up with high school. Professor Ross, you said high schoolers, maybe you've talked to or read about, don't even want to put a label to it. It's I imagine it's harder to deal with this in high school.
Yes. The interventions in high schools are far more challenging for a couple of reasons. One reason it's far more challenging is if we ask high school, the key to bully prevention, again, is to remove that peer attention and to reinforce positive peer attention. But the problem is that anytime we tell high schoolers what to do, right? So this high schooler, you're going to tell them when they see bullying to step in and say stop or something like that. It's going to be uncool. Instantly, the language, whatever it is going to be uncool. So a lot of work needs to be done around things that will actually work in the high school. And that's really a challenging thing. One of the things we've been developing actually out of Oregon right now is a group called Stand for Courage, where they are working to simply reinforce kids for standing up for others. So if you experience somebody standing up for you, or if you stand up for somebody else, you can actually nominate them or nominate yourself for celebrity recognition. And so what we're doing is celebrities are going into schools and reinforcing the kids for standing up for other kids. Mm-hmm. We're finding that to be an effective initial strategy for supporting high schools. Ideally, we want to get into the teaching them specific skills for standing up for each other, but we've really run into some challenges because it's uncool. We have to form focus groups and have the kids actually develop the language, and we're finding that to work. In fact, we're working with the island of Guam right now in all their middle schools, and they recently had a competition where all the middle school students, one group from each middle school would create a video on different language they could use to step in and say stop to incidents they see happening. And we're finding that to be very effective at the middle school level. We got some great video footage out of it, too.
Very good. We're out of time. Much more to be said. Where to go for more information, Professor Ross?
www.pbis.org, pbis.org. You can find all the curriculum materials for free there, as well as all the school-wide positive behavior support materials.
And for Human Rights Education Center of Utah, the website is hrecutah.org. A lot of great materials there. And just Google bullying. You can find some great material. A lot of national discussion is happening. We're happy to participate here. Carla Kelly, Executive Director and Founder of Human Rights Education Center of Utah, has been with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Scott Ross, Assistant Professor in Special Education and Rehabilitation Department at USU. Thanks.
Thank you.
And Clint Farmer, School Counselor, Edith Bowen Laboratory School in Loving. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1, 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1, 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1, 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1, 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1, 91.5 Logan.
Support for Utah Public Radio comes from S.E. Needham Jewelers in historic downtown Logan since 1896, specializing in diamond engagement rings and custom jewelry design, middle of the block at the sign of the clock. Information at seneedham.com.